This is joint work with AJ Jazra, who's an ex-PhD student of mine, who's now recently moved to the Department of Mathematics, Imperial College London. I'm based in the Oxford Centre for Gene Function, which is aligned to the Department of Statistics, and I'm in the Mathematical Genetics group there with Peter Donnelly, Jotun Hein, and various others. So that'll give you a bit of an indication of the type of applications that I'm interested in. Okay. So the overview and objectives of this talk today, what I want to do is discuss some recent advancements that we've been working on directly in what we term population MC or Monte Carlo. And population MC means kind of different things to different people, so I'm going to be quite specific about what I mean by the things that we've worked on. And in particular, almost all of the probability models that we work on or that we develop involve some aspect of transdimensionality, i.e. that the structure of the model is not known or fixed a priori. Okay. So I'm going to introduce and discuss these population Monte Carlo methods, and in particular I want to report on our experience in trying to implement a number of these methods on a canonical regression problem. And this involves a Bayesian linear regression model with covariate set uncertainty. So this is where we have a large bag of potential covariates, some or in fact many of which will not be relevant to the regression task. Okay. And the particular data study that I'm involved with or that we used for this, for our study, involves a filtered set. So this is, we've reduced the dimensionality a little bit to arrive at 5,000 gene expression measurements, which are recorded in triplicate on 318 individuals. Okay. So, well, where I come from, I work on almost exclusively on Bayesian statistical modeling at, I guess, the interface of applied and methodological developments. Many of the problems I work on, I said, are kind of too complex for standard or conventional MCMC, but we, as we heard the interesting talks yesterday, they're not so complex that we have to go to the ABC. So I'm kind of hitting the middle ground here and looking to develop computational approaches for statistical inference, and driven by real-world applications. So it's typically where we would apply standard MCMC and we weren't happy with the outcome of that, or we weren't convinced that the chain was, let's say, mixing well enough, we would try and develop alternative techniques. And it's just so happened, I mean, we haven't actually hit, in the applications I work on, things that require the approximate Bayesian computation. Okay. So it's long been conjectured that by sampling multiple chains in parallel, you do better than running a single MCMC chain when the target density is complex. And it's a little kind of, I think it's a bit kind of tautological, because usually when people say complex, they mean that you can improve upon the running of a long, single, long-running MCMC approach using multiple samples. So we're going to consider the situation by what improvement do we get by running chains in parallel? And we're going to consider, well, originally we were going to consider three recent approaches. We're actually only going to consider two of these that fall within what we call the population schema. And the first one is based on an idea of evolutionary Monte Carlo that was introduced by Liang and Wong, where they combined ideas from stochastic optimization, in particular simulated annealing and genetic algorithms, to try and give improved samplers. And in recent work, which hopefully will be coming out fairly soon, AJ, Dave Stevens, who's now at McGill, and myself, worked on extensions of this to transdimensional problems. The other approach that I wish to discuss is a very recent paper that appeared in Annals. Actually, has it appeared yet? It hasn't appeared yet. Okay. is to appear in annals, called the Equi-Energy Sampler. And this was introduced by Sam Ku, Zhu and Wing Wong. And finally, the method I'm not going to discuss is sequential Monte Carlo. The reason is that for various reasons, this canonical regression example that I'm discussing, we had problems in getting hold of the data set. So we only actually got the data set towards the middle of last week. And we were unable to get the sequential Monte Carlo up and running in this time. So that's why that's not on the discussion list today. Okay, so I'm going to briefly review the evolutionary Monte Carlo method and then the equi-energy sampler method. And there's some very common structure between the two. Okay. So, evolutionary Monte Carlo combines two concepts from stochastic optimization, namely simulated annealing, where you would heat up a target cost function and then cool it, and genetic algorithms. And it provides a very small, I guess, generalization of the parallel tempering or MC cubed approach of Gaia in 91. And the method works as follows. Okay, we're going to simulate K, capital K, parallel Markov chains. Of course, you know, we often hear people talk about parallel. These are not really, they're kind of simulated on a sequential single processor, but in theory you could imagine, if you had access to such machines, that they could actually be simulated in parallel. The key thing about these chains is that they're all going to have an individual so-called temperature parameter, and these temperature parameters are ordered. Starting off as T1, the coolest chain, is set to be temperature 1, and the hottest chain is set to be something very large. Okay. In particular, suppose the task is to sample from a probability model which can be written in this form. So every chain has a particular target distribution, P sub T, yeah, but those P sub T's have common structure, i.e. they can all be written by, here's a kind of a normalizing constant, an exponential of minus h of x divided by t. Okay. So in particular, the important thing to note, of course, is h of x is common to all chains, and h of x represents the standardized, i.e. common to all chains, unnormalized negative log probability. Okay. So that you can think of h of x as the log probability on the target distribution, okay? i.e. when t equals 1, you're sampling from the correct distribution, the distribution of interest. Okay. The motivation for setting up these k-parallel chains at different temperatures is that by heating the densities, we flatten out the peaks in the distribution and we raise the troughs. Okay, so we kind of anneal those distributions, and this will allow high temperature chains, the Markov chains, to traverse low probability regions. Okay, and this is the principal problem that we find of mixing of standard MCMC on complex target densities, is they get trapped in local modes. Okay, so they're unable to traverse the valleys, yeah, the low probability valleys, and find other modes. And the hope is by heating up these things, the hotter chains are able to sample the landscape much easier than the lower chains. Okay, the trick then is, of course, is to use multi-chain updates, i.e. to get the chains to interact in such a way as to feed the states from the higher temperature chains back into the lower temperature chains, and in particular into the chain sampling the target density of interest. Okay, so that's the goal. So this is a plot of 10 chains which are not interacting. Okay, so these are just run. This is on actually taken from an example further on, which is sampling a covariate set in a Bayes linear model. But you could think of this as any kind of target model distribution that you were working on. because this is a kind of a common feature of such methods. Okay, so let me just kind of explain what this is. We see that the hotter chains, the temperature is really running from top to bottom. Yeah. So the red chain here, the Markov chain, is the hottest chain, and the blue one at the top is the coolest chain that is sampling the density of interest. Okay. So there's, at the moment, I'm just running these things univariate. So the things to note are that the hot chains move around, seem to move around a lot. I don't know if you can make out, but this top blue line is very sticky. It's not actually moving very much. The other thing to note, which is really important, is that the heated chains... Sorry, I should have said that this is the log probability. Yeah? So this is the standardized, unnormalized log probability. This is h of x. Yeah? Or minus h of x. Yeah? The other thing to note is that the heated chains sample low probability states. Okay? And that's going to be really important. And the reason, of course, for that is that if I heat up a density, a lot of the landscape which is being raised is actually of low probability in terms of h of x. Okay, so we have these two features here. Hot chains move around a lot, or seem to jump more in terms of log probability, but also they sample low probability states, because the chances of them hitting an actual true local mode are small. Okay. So those were just showing plots on terms of the log probability. Of course, what we're actually interested in is mixing of the states, the underlying states that are being sampled. It's kind of hard to visualize mixing in high-dimensional states. So I'm just going to say that the two methods that we kind of use to look at this is the first method that we're going to use to look at this is by taking the states, yeah, that are sampled by the Markov chains and then perform a principal components analysis. So in other words, we're going to project the high-dimensional state space onto a low number of principal components to try and get a feel for the mixing of the Markov chains. Okay. So this, from the previous example, you can't really see, I don't think. These are red dots connected. This is a highly thinned chain sampling from the target distribution in the first three principal components. Okay? And so here we can see it's a trajectory. And of course, if we then introduce all of the target distributions, that ends up looking like this. Yeah, so that red cloud down there was the previous sample path. And the only reason I put this in is just to note that, of course, what we're seeing when we look at this is actually the target distribution is just sampling a single local mode. Okay? Whereas these chains down here are jumping around the state space. Okay. So far we've not talked about any kind of interaction between the chains themselves. Okay. So the rationale for evolution Monte Carlo is allow the chains to actually interact. Okay. And they interact by a mixture of move types. The first is just a standard single chain move, so this is just a univariate approach where you might update each chain just using Metropolis-Hastings or Gibbs sampler within chain. Okay, but the interesting moves as far as the population MC is concerned is the exchange and the crossover move. And the exchange move just simply swaps the states across chains. Okay, so this is just going to take a state in one of the Markov chains, the state of another Markov chain, and just exchange them. And we'll have a look at what the acceptance probability is for that. The other move is a less drastic move, and that involves partial swapping of the states. Yeah. So this will take some components in one of the chains, some of the components in the other chains, and just swap those components. And that's termed a crossover move, with an analogy with recombination in genetics and genetic algorithms. Okay, I'll run over these now. So the exchange move swaps whole states across chains. That is, we select two chains, let's say the ith and the jth chain, which are at temperatures Ti and Tj, and we propose to just change the states. Yeah. So the state of the chain in the ith chain is just swapped with the state of the chain in the jth chain. Typically, we might only choose neighboring temperatures to swap. Okay. And there's a good reason for that, which I'll say in a minute. Or you might choose with probability of how close they are in terms of their temperature ranges. Okay. We then
ask a trivial point at this stage. Swapping chains is equivalent to swapping temperatures, isn't it? I mean, you're just swapping the temperature label. Is that right? And if so, that's that seemed a more natural way to think about it to me. But anyway, it's any trivial difference. But
You could think of it either way. So the swapping of the states, or the swapping of the temperatures, if you like, is then accepted with the standard probability of min 1 alpha, where the log of alpha is given by this. It's the difference in terms of the log probabilities of the two states times the difference in the reciprocal of their temperature parameters. Okay. We're going to assume that the choice of the ith and the jth chain is symmetric. Otherwise, we would have a Hastings-type ratio in there, term in there. So the thing to note is you always accept a move from a higher temperature chain into a lower temperature chain if the higher temperature chain is sampling a more probable state. Okay. Otherwise, the log acceptance probability is driven in terms of the difference in the temperatures times the difference in the log probability. Okay. So the reason for one, perhaps choosing only neighboring states, should have been apparent from this kind of canonical or typical picture, is that the acceptance probability is going to be driven by the difference in the log probability of the current states, and high temperature chains tend to sample low probability models. Okay, so in other words, if I try and swap the red with the blue, that would be a difference of around 250 on the log scale. Okay. So yeah, pretty unlikely to be accepted. Okay. Right. Okay. So that's the full exchange move. The crossover move is kind of a bit more subtle, and it attempts. So the exchange move makes large jumps. It changes the whole. I guess this is the reason why you would want to work on the state space. So the exchange move changes everything. The idea of the crossover is to make less bold partial exchange of information. Okay. And the way to think about this is, suppose that the state space is partitioned just into two sets, A and B. So I have components in set A and components in set B. It's a partition. The crossover move selects two chains at the two temperatures and then proposes to keep the ith chain, set A in chain I, the same, but bring in set B from chain J. And similarly, swap the BI into the jth chain. So this is simply saying, rather than swap all of the states, just swap partial of the state space. Okay. So in terms of my Bayes linear model, if it's sampling on covariates, it would say keep some of the covariates the same, but just swap other parts across. Okay. And the acceptance probability has the same form as the exchange move, but now these, of course, the ith and the jth are not entirely swapped, only kind of partially swapped. And here, this is where the art kind of comes in, and a bit of experience in working on these things is that the art of a good crossover move is in finding an effective stochastic partition of the state space pi on A such that the swapped components are well matched. So you kind of want to swap like with like. I hope it'll become clearer actually for the linear model example. Okay. So this is what 20 chains that are now interacting using evolutionary Monte Carlo looks like. Okay. So here is a thinned, I think, every 1,000 moves or maybe 100 moves. Here again is the log probability scale. And the thing to note now is you see these switches between the chains. So the previous picture looked like this. This was no interaction. This is just running parallel chains. There's nothing going on other than we're just running parallel chains. And here is the interacting chains using the evolutionary Monte Carlo. And of course, what we see is when we propose to change states that the blue chain jumps into this state and therefore has that log probability, and vice versa. Okay. And the hope is, of course, is that the hot chains down here, which are sampling widely, are going to pass information back up the temperature ladder. Okay. So, in fact, it would be a really nice plot, but I thought last night there's no way I had time to do it. It's actually track her state as perhaps as it moved up and down through that ladder. Okay. Yeah, it was beyond me last night. Okay, so that was the no interaction trains. So just some comments on evolutionary Monte Carlo. I really mean that it is pretty trivial to implement. I mean, I think I would say for most kind of, in a matter of hours, for most MCMC samplers, because we just simply need to replace, for example, state vectors with arrays. Yeah, so we're just going to run from one chain to k chains and just keep track of that temperature. And if you're only going to do exchange moves, then it's just simple. You just propose every so often just to flip these things over. In the paper that we have with AJ, we have some theoretical developments that show that you improve for the standard reversible jump case over univariate vanilla kind of reversible jump. So we can get some theoretical improvements in terms of convergence times. But really, it's the empirical improvement, which I can guarantee you, in my experience about, that it's a very, very effective method. Okay. There are three kind of key aspects for user-designed, for the user-defined parameters that we need to set if we're going to get one of these running. First of all is the number of chains, K. Then, of course, we have the temperature ladder. And then finally, if we wish to do crossovers, we need to design what we think is going to be an effective crossover move. Okay. The next two slides should be definitely directed at AJ, if you have any questions on these. So in terms of the theoretical developments for the population evolutionary approach or population MC, reversible jump MCMC, we looked at bounds on the total variation distance of an end step, of the end step kernel defined by the exchange move. And what we can show is obviously for uniformly ergodic Markov chains, we have this bound on total variation distance, and we're then able to explore the setting of these parameters. Okay. But the take-home message for me, and I hope for you, is that if we look at these in the case of a Bayes, for example, a Bayes linear model, we have here the solid line is denotes the total variation bound for a standard Gibbs sampling kind of vanilla reversible jump MCMC, and the dotted line for population. Yeah.
Could you go back to the previous slide?
Yeah.
So where does the minorization condition?
I'll point you to AJ in the back there.
the constant epsilon is the value in the minorization condition, and the n naught is the iterated value of the kernel.
So this is a Atherin Newlin minorization condition.
Uh-huh. Okay. Nice. Thank you. Good. I knew that. Practical issues for running these things, okay? The first thing is when too few chains are wasteful, okay? So on the previous condition, if I was to run 5 chains, what you get is an energy plot that looks like this, okay? And what we see is that the hotter chain is broken away, okay? Well, perhaps you can't, it's a bit fuzzy. But this bottom chain here, there's no cross-sampling. Here we can see little kind of jumps across the higher order chains, the cooler chains, but nothing going on here. Okay, that is, the temperature ladder is too wide, and we're going to get very low, in fact no acceptance probabilities across those into those cooler states. Okay, however, we've got a very strong visual diagnostic here. Yeah. So when we're running the evolutionary algorithm, we can just keep a plot of these things going, and you'll quickly see when the chains are not jumping. Yeah. So all you need to do really is to plot out this for, let's say, 5. We would plot this out, see that there was no jumping going on in the hottest chain across, and it increase the number of chains. I think it's an interesting something that AJ and I have talked about is to actually try and do this adaptively. Yeah, so to have the algorithm itself try and, on some kind of birth-death, to increase or decrease the number of chains. Okay, but just looking at the visually at these log probabilities, we can. Alternatively, you can just model the K by K matrix acceptance probabilities, and if you're not getting any acceptance of jumps, just increase K. Okay, so we set up the following kind of simulation study to explore differences, improvements with the vanilla MCMC, and this is a simple linear regression analysis where we have X is a design matrix which is 100 observations or measurements taken from 1,000 covariates or predictors or features, whatever you want to call them, and we just drew these as standard normals. So we have 1,000 covariates on 100 individuals. We take the final, we're going to add another 20 covariates in, which are correlated with the first covariates, and they're correlated using a very naive little trick of just calling them the same as the first 20 and adding a little bit of noise. So in other words, the column spaces of the final 20 are very aligned with the column spaces of the first 20. And then we're going to generate a response variable using the first 20. Okay. So in other words, only the first 20 of this 1,020 variables are truly relevant to the regression problem. Okay. All the rest are irrelevant, and we've kind of thrown in a little bit of a googly by adding in these final 20, which are strongly correlated with the first. Okay. So that's what I just said there. Y is dependent on the first. We then set up a Bayes linear model where we're going to sample covariate sets. Okay, and clearly there are 1,020 minus 1 unique covariate sets, because every column of X could be in or out of the model. That's the 2, and then there are 1,020 columns of X. And we're going to use these samplers to try and explore the posterior distribution on the model space. Okay. So just a quick two-liner on, or two-page on the Bayes linear model is just to note that we're going to, models are defined via an indicator vector which has 1 to p, in our case p is 1,020, such that if gamma I is 1, it means that the ith column of X is in the model. Yeah? And if gamma I is 0, it means the ith column of X isn't in the model. So the sum of the gamma i's give you the dimensionality of the model. Okay, and then the actual sampling distribution, given an indicator vector gamma, is just the linear model. We're going to use natural conjugate priors, which are normal inverse gamma, and the reason for using natural conjugate priors is that the posterior probability, this is the important thing, is that the posterior probability of any covariate set has an analytic form. Yeah? So if you shout out a covariate set, I'll use covariate 5, 28, and 630, we can put it in there and I can give you the log likelihood or the log probability. Yeah? Having integrated out over beta and sigma squared. And that's just some standard conjugate Bayesian type integrals. Okay. The thing to note, just a little aside about the Bayes linear model, is it might seem restrictive, but actually it maps onto a whole load of other kind of nonlinear models, just if X is itself a nonlinear basis function of some original measurement set. So
could I make sure that I understand? Is both x and beta are known, right? Are unknown, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But this is a marginal. That is a marginal likelihood having integrated out over beta and sigma squared. Okay. And the reason we can do those integrals is that this is conjugate. So beta and sigma are normal inverse gamma. A priori and a posteriori, they're normal inverse gamma. So we can then do the sum of gamma plus one dimensional integrals to get this. Okay. So the key thing is that we can then form our Markov chains to walk simply on the covariate set without recourse to the actual betas or the sigma squared. If you want to get hold of the betas, you can sample them, but you don't need to in order to get the thing working. Actually, it's a neat little exercise that if you do sample the betas from their full conditionals, having changed x, you get back to this anyhow. Yeah. So the sampled betas don't enter into the acceptance probability. But that's leading us astray. Okay, so so the thing to note is that the many nonlinear models have this kind of linear form if we fix the basis functions. So free knot regression splines, wavelets, classification trees, neural nets, etc. Okay. I'm going to try and speed up a little bit. We ran vanilla reversible jump MCMC, which would be Gibbs sampling on the indicator variables, the gamma i's or Metropolis-Hastings on the gamma i. So you go and choose a covariate. If it's in the model, you propose to take it out the model. If it's out the model, you propose to put it in the model. And then you accept or reject based on the ratio of those probabilities. Following a, that should say 50,000 burning, rather than a zero. Seeded with the same sample. Okay, so we had a 50,000 burn-in. The temperature of the chains, one of the methods that we recommend in our paper is just set this to be the reciprocal of the index of the chain. Okay? What did we then do? Oh, we did principal components analysis on for the population reversible jump to have a feel for how it was moving around the space. And then we combined the samples from the vanilla algorithm and the population algorithm for the target chains, and then looked at...
You said the temperatures were going to go up really high.
Mm.
Sorry, what sort of thing is
that? Oh, yeah, I know. So I think we for 20, so it goes up to... What would that be? 1 over 0.505. Well, it's the thing to note. Well, we can come onto that, onto how to choose the lowest temperature. In fact, I want to cover that later. The highest temperature, sorry. Okay. So we did principal components analysis on just on the within the population approach. And the red here, the little red blob, is the target chain. So, of course, as just as before, the target chain is not exploring much of the space. Well, you wouldn't really expect it to, because a lot of this portion out here actually has low probability, of course. Yeah. But the key thing to note is when we combine the target density samples, we get a picture that looks like this. So the blue, this is a kind of a pretty super thin set of samples. But the vanilla algorithm is just sitting in kind of one portion of the state space, okay? Whereas the population approach is looks like it's sampling kind of two modes and also jumping in between these fairly fairly well. And that's kind of consistent with our experience. So you could say that the thing hasn't converged because actually the red hasn't jumped in. What you would like is the red also to kind of jump into this... region here. Okay, so this is a 1,000 dimensional space projected onto the first two principal components. I have, okay. We can actually then look at the log marginal likelihoods that are actually sampled themselves. And the thing to note, it also finds higher log likelihoods, and that's kind of consistent with our experience. Okay. there's an important performance issue, and that's this. If we go back and look at the acceptance probability, well, clearly the acceptance probability drops off sharply as the H of X's get further apart. Yeah. So as the chains are sampling different probability states, obviously the acceptance probability drops off. And that's kind of unfortunate. Yeah? Because the high temperature chains are sampling low probability states because we've heated up the thing. So in the sense that the chains have to become aligned in terms of their probabilities, yeah, before you would accept, get a high acceptance rate. And this is where this idea of equi-energy sampling comes in. Okay. So we're now going to switch and talk about this equi-energy sampler, and it's got this one very intuitive, neat idea, I think, which is that it makes use of matching states in terms of their probabilities across chains backwards in time. Okay. The thing to note, it's not an MCMC procedure, though it does sample from the steady state for the stationary steady state distributions of the chains are the target densities. And it goes like this. Suppose that the energy function, this is our log probability standardized, can be partitioned into energy bounds. Okay? And let Ix be the indicator for the x state of which bound you are in. And it's easiest to do this in terms of a picture. Okay? So this was my previous plot. I've now taken out the lines of just, this is, I think, six chains, energy, six parallel chains running forward in terms of iteration. Here's their log probability. Yeah? So the evolutionary approach says, suppose I want to update this blue cross here. Yeah? So that's the blue chain. I want to update it. What I do is I'm going to swap, if I did an exchange move, we'll swap this blue state here with, let's say, this red state here. Yeah? So we only swap chains at the current point. Now, of course, if the difference in the log probabilities is large, that acceptance is going to be small. Yeah, because we're jumping from a high probability region into a low. Okay. The equi-energy sampler partitions the log probability into intervals, yeah, and then samples backwards in time. So in other words, to update this blue cross here, I would look at the collection of historic states that are within that energy band and sample those. And of course, by construction, the previous states in this energy band are matched in terms of probability. Okay? But hopefully, if you have a high temperature chain in here, they're not matched in terms of the states. Okay? In other words, you'll make a large jump in state space by matching in terms of the probability. Okay. That's the key concept. Okay, is that we look back, we look across on the energy bands backwards and match states in terms of their probability. Okay. So how do we do that? Well, just set up a little bit of notation. So for the ith chain after time s, we have a sequence of states. These are, we're assuming, after convergence. So this is just the realization of the Markov chain. Yeah? And we're going to partition into k energy bands. Yeah? Such that the thing to notice here, the SJI stores the collection of realized states in the jth energy band for the ith chain. So that would just be, in terms of this would be an energy band, just store all historic states that lie in that band. Okay. And then the update proposal goes like this. At each iteration, either update using a standard Metropolis-Hastings or Gibbs sampler, or first of all determine the band that you're in, the current state, yeah? Then propose an update to that state by sampling uniformly at random from historic states that were in that energy band. Okay? And then accept with probability, where again we have this kind of standard form. I should have said that we're looking at the ith plus one, so we look at the next hottest chain up, yeah, and grab the states historically from that. Okay, and of course, the thing to note is that these are bounded. Yeah, that log acceptance probability is bounded because, lower bounded, because we're in the same energy band. Okay. So by matching states in probabilities, we're going to improve acceptance. And so unlike the evolutionary approach, we don't have to be aligned in terms of probability. And the acceptance probabilities are bounded below. Note the exchange is only in one direction. You don't switch the states. You just go and grab a historic state and reseed the Markov chain on that state. Okay, here's the equi-energy sampler running on that previous example. Okay, again, we've thinned the chains, and what you're seeing is a much higher acceptance rate that's running between the chains. Okay, so we can see that this appears to be doing lots and lots of swapping, and swapping, of course, is a good thing. Okay, I'm going to speed up a little. What are the implementation issues? This isn't the hardest. This is the most annoying thing, is that you need to store the historic states. Okay, so you're going to run into really annoying memory problems. Okay, so it's not a free lunch in terms of that. You need to store the historic states. You need to specify the temperature ladder, and you need to specify the energy bands. Storage issues are a pain. They slow down the simulation. They're not pathological in our experience. The temperature ladder, again, we can set. There's some good heuristics for that. It's the energy bands that are actually, if you think about it, are difficult, because in order to know how to set the energy bands, you need to know the distribution on the log probability, and that's the thing, of course, you don't know. Yeah. So in practice, you need to launch training runs. Yeah. In fact, what we do is we run an evolutionary Monte Carlo in order to learn something about the distribution on terms of this. Yeah. Now, this is the distribution on the log probability. Yeah. So we launch training runs in order to learn how to partition those into energy bands. I wanted to finish within the next 5 minutes, so... We used all of these three samplers, the vanilla algorithm, the equi-energy sampler, and our population reversible jump on a large kind of scale genomics data set. This is an ongoing collaboration that I have with a group at the Wellcome Trust Center for Human Genetics. Probably the middle of last week, I think it was, or early last week, got hold of this data set, which is 5,000 gene expression measurements taken on in triplicate on 318 individuals. There's a number of response variables that are interesting. First of all, they have a set of candidate genes that they're particularly interested in. So this relates to actually the underlying interest is in asthma. It's an asthma study. So there's particular candidate genes of interest, as well as there's a number of clinical phenotypes. Okay. The objective is to infer, they want to infer genes which are associated with the clinical phenotypes, as well as those that are co-expressed and hence possibly co-regulated with the candidate set. And the way that we've approached this in terms of the sampling is we just built linear models using the log expression as covariate set, and where the response variable was either a phenotype or candidate gene set. Okay. How do we go about specifying these tuning parameters? The number of chains, we use this visual diagnostic. Yeah. So we'll set 5 chains going, and we'll see if there's much switching. If there isn't, we'll increase that by 5 by 5. And by the time we got up to 20 chains, there appeared to be some fairly good mixing across the states from the hottest down to the coolest, which is on the chain of interest. Okay. Again, we just use one of the techniques that we recommend in our paper, which is just setting the temperature ladder as the reciprocal of 1 over I. But again, you can set the temperature ladder using the visual diagnostic. So you can see if there's a band that appears to be missing, either there's not much interaction going across, you can put in a chain, plug in the gap, essentially, in the temperature ladder. Okay. I don't have time really to go into the particular crossover move that we designed In fact, I'm actually just going to skip this. We designed what I think is a fairly neat kind of crossover move for generalized linear models for this, which is by taking, we took the original design space and projected it down onto its first principal components, which gives us a particular ordering of the columns of X for the crossover operator to work on. Okay. But you need to kind of be working on this to understand that's probably a really good, well, it seems to be a good thing to do, to project the columns onto a linear sequence for the crossover operator to work on. Okay. So these are just some very preliminary results that we've got running 200,000 iterations. So we can look at the distribution on K. This is against the clinical phenotype. Up here we have the standard vanilla reversible jump. It's very sticky. This is a pretty highly thinned chain. I think it's thinned every 500 or so iterations. So we can see that it's very, very kind of sticky in the sampler, whereas the population reversible jump mixes really well. The equi-energy, everything I say about the population thing, the equi-energy works better, yeah, at a cost, yeah. So if we had the equi-energy plot up there, it would be working better. But in terms of, I'd say, an 8 to 10-fold increase in computation time. Whereas I should say that all of the other ones are matched for computation time. So for the single run and for the parallel run, the single run effectively has k times the run time of the parallel run. Okay. We find higher probability states using our population approach. So that's kind of, well, not so high, but 4 on the log scale is reasonable. The crossover move we decide gave us a 1/3 improvement, and the acceptance probability, so this is the thing to know, the equi-energy has around an 80% acceptance probability of these large moves because you're matching in terms of the energy bands. Okay. Whereas our standard sampler only has around a 30%, which is actually still pretty good. We've sent these kind of lists for annotation to see whether we're actually sampling things that are biologically could be valid rather than just statistical correlation. Yeah. Okay. So just to summarize, the last few slides, I want to summarize. What are the advantages of population reversible jump over equi-energy? Well, the main ones are that you can accommodate tailored moves. So although I didn't have time to really expand on it, you're able to design, yeah, to kind of hand-tailor these jump moves using the crossover operator. This allows you as a user to input knowledge on the structure of the problem. Okay, and that's really nice. I don't mean to say this lightly, but it really is almost trivial to implement these standard parallel tempering ideas. You just need to keep track of K chains and keep track of the temperatures. Okay. The equi-energy, the advantages there, of course, is it's a very intuitive notion of matching in terms of probability, which is the thing that's driving your acceptance rates, gives you a lower bound. The disadvantages are computational time. It's quite a large amount of storage. Implementation time is not trivial. Yeah, so I said maybe a day. I think that's underestimating it. So on the Bayes linear model, it took me about a day and a half, I think, of hacking around with the code in order to get it so it was operating without getting really kind of bogged down. Setting of the energy rings actually requires training runs, and so it's kind of a bit paradoxical. But you need a good sampler in order to find what the energy bands should be. So we used evolutionary Monte Carlo, our population approach, in order to learn about the energy bands, in order to get the equi-energy to go. Okay. What's the future on kind of ongoing work? Well, you know, the natural thing is once you've worked with these two things is to just simply think about a hybrid sampler. So it's straightforward just to combine ideas across of the two things. Yeah. So to allow matching of probability states backward in time, as well as the well-tailored crossover moves. And another thing that we are kind of currently working on is this idea of you could think about developing independent samplers that are themselves energy banded. Yeah. So rather, if you're developing automatic independent samplers, rather than proposing from a single proposal density, partition it in terms of the current energy of the model. Theoretical issues, by setting the highest chain very large, yeah, we're able to sample IID from the density for that chain. Okay? So, for example, at the hottest temperature, we might just be sampling from the prior, which is just getting accepted. Yeah? And, of course, being able to, this is going to feed IID samples into the population, and this has a marked impact on the theoretical convergence rates. Of course, the problem with that is you're going to need lots of chains if you're going to get one that's sampling IID. So that then naturally leads on to what's the impact on the actual kind of empirical rate of convergence as the number of chains increases. You've got this trade-off. You've got more things to simulate from, but the hotter things, you can sample IID. Okay. And the other thing, which is joint work with Sylvia Richardson and Manuela, a student of hers, is we're looking at improved crossover moves for Bayesian generalized linear models, and Manuela's doing some kind of really nice work looking at partial correlation graphs. And I stolen one of her slides, or one of Sylvia's slides. So there, for the crossover moves, we're generating graphs on the covariate space. Yeah? And then seeking to cut off branches and swap branches across the models. Yeah? So remember we said for the crossover operator, it needs to work on well-matched sets. So we're developing this concept of forming a graph of the underlying structure of the model and then breaking off branches and swapping those. And the initial results from that are kind of promising. Okay. So to conclude, recent advancements in what I've termed population Monte Carlo show kind of real promise, I think, in terms of improving over conventional MCMC. And we have a paper where we kind of show some nice things. The standard kind of evolutionary or population is trivial to implement, and often, in fact, you know, for any reasonable kind of reasonably complex models, I haven't seen it not improve over the standard single chain method. Equi-energy is more demanding, both in implementation and computation, but the backward matching certainly improves acceptance rates. And finally, of course, hybrid approaches, which we're working on, seem a kind of a powerful way forward. So I'd like to acknowledge the Medical Research Council that support me, a considerable chunk of what I do, and that's my email address. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. We've got time for some questions.
We've got 20 temperature states there.
Yeah.
It's roughly 20 times the computation of a vanilla MCMC. And so when you're doing comparisons...
Everything was on a... Absolutely.
You were doing...
Yes, absolutely. Everything was on a common... On a common basis,
CPU,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So when I update my temperature chains, yeah, I choose a chain at random. So the algorithm I have in here, just you set k is 1 or k equals 20, and it just runs the same number of iterations. It's just when k is 1, the single chain move, yeah, you only ever propose to update the target chain. Yeah. So yes.
Wait. When you're doing this equal energy substitution, I mean, what's wrong with just taking a fixed number back in the past, in which case it would again become a Markov chain?
So what, in keeping the sets fixed?
Well,
backward sets need to converge to
3,000. I don't know.
Well, in practice, you could do so because, of course, in theory, those sets are unbounded. They just keep increasing in cardinality. In practice, I suspect that you could just truncate at some point. But I think you'd have to be careful in terms of the theoretical kind of convergence issues. So it probably wouldn't be sampling from the correct distribution, but it might be close.
I mean, it seems to me like if you cut off at a fixed historic time backwards, then fixed number backwards, then you would just get an ordinary Markov chain out of it. I mean, with a lot of states, but...
Yeah.
the right invariant distribution.
Yeah. So the yeah, that's the crucial thing. That I think in practice, if you say, well, I'm just going to keep incrementing the cardinality of the energy states up to, let's say, 50,000 or 20,000, and then we can cut off there. It wouldn't make a great deal of difference, but in theory, it certainly introduces a bias, and you're not sampling from the correct distribution. However, as we've seen yesterday, you know, we can get away with sampling from stuff that's close if it means that we can actually get a good, you know, if we get a more kind of efficient sampler going. Hi, Raz.
So, the equi-energy sampler, I didn't really understand what the asymptotic justification for the asymptotics are, because it seems to have a lot of memory built into it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not an MCMC procedure. So, and they have apparently a slightly dodgy backward inductive proof on in the paper. Yeah. But it's not an MCMC.
Do you understand correctly that you use the chain with temperature 1 for inference, really?
Yes.
Can you use all the other states by using
So you can improve the sampling by using and weighting the states from all the chains, yeah? However, that retracts on my ability to code it in a... Yeah, so yeah, clearly you would want to, yeah.
You need some ratios of the partition functions, the ZTs, somehow.
Yes, but you can get those estimates exactly out from the chains.
That should be feasible.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So if I was to...
That it's an enormous waste, in some sense, the whole thing, right?
What?
The whole construction of all these chains, if you don't use...
So everything I've taken here now is the minimum improvement that you would get, having been wasteful of... having done all of this effort, throwing away k minus 1 chains. Yeah, so absolutely, you would want to, you can incorporate all of the information. Yeah.
And then the other question I have, in some sense, I see to all these methods as, if you use only the last chain for inference, as clever restarts, right? Or in some sense, so that in some sense, the comparison is with running K chains or a certain number of chains from random starting points.
Right. Rather than a single long-running chain, you mean?
Instead of, if you look to the last chain, you are in some sense, when you move it, when you swap it somehow, you are restarting it in a clever way.
Well, I think it probably is a restart if the hottest chain is sampling, let's say, IID.
Yeah, it's not a real restart because you might reject the proposed. Right?
Yeah.
So you don't. Yeah. But when you do it, in some sense you're moving it to somewhere else. So why not just deciding 3,000 new starting points and running 3,000 chains in parallel? I think that should be also compared.
Right. Yeah. I think
that is very easy.
Absolutely. So that would be a good comparison to do, to say, if I'm going to run 200,000 iterations, that means that, but then if I'm going to do K, that would mean that I'm only ever going to do like 10,000 iterations. So I run it for 9,000 and pop off the, no, it would be, I think it would, you could do it, yeah, but it would require quite a long run.
I mean, you could see how many swaps you have really made with the lowest with that chain.
Yeah,
I think you have made 100 swaps.
Yeah.
So the alternative is to start to run 100 chains.
Yeah. I think what would be is have the bottom chain sampling IID from the prior, and then watch if the state filters its way right the way up into the T1, and then that kind of regeneration. Yeah.
Okay, one more question. Okay. What is, in your opinion, better approach, to go with equi-energy sampler or to decrease the separation between the temperatures and use parallel tempering?
Well, in my experience, you need parallel tempering in order to get the equi-energy. So I would say, first of all, code up parallel tempering, get that working, the population approach. And then, if you want to do improvements, code up the equi-energy. Because they fit very naturally one on top of the other. Once you've done the one, the other thing just kind of fits in.
Okay, right, well, thank you very much indeed.